Next Sunday, Pastor Rocker? Really?
Yes, Izzy. Your mother and father and I agree that you are ready.
And Pastor is coming over tonight to talk more about it.
Hey.
Hey, guess what?
I know. Pastor says I'm ready, too.
That's great. You and me and our families all together.
Hey, Esau. Izzy and I are going to join the Secret Society this Sunday.
Yeah, big deal.
What's the matter?
Who wants to join a secret society?
Well, everybody.
Yeah, who says?
Everybody.
Yeah, well, don't count on me.
I'm joining with my parents.
Have fun, but don't look for me. Anyhow, I don't have any parents.
Okay, bye.
And in the words of Peter Kropotkin, mutual aid is reflected in nature.
Pastor, what is the secret society?
Well, Izzy, in our faith, we have special organizations for penitents called confraternities and archconfraternities. Some of them do things like give charity or bury the dead when families can't afford to. But there are also secret mutual aid societies that have existed since before Roman times. Your family and others belong to such a society that operates in the shadows and helps others anonymously.
You mean we don't get credit for helping?
That's right, Izzy.
Then why do it? Izzy, if we all wanted a reward before helping one another, then no one would be helped. There's plenty of cold competition in the secular world.
So we operate in the shadows, taking care of those who are powerless, poor, or vulnerable. And by doing it in secret, we prevent any one person from taking credit for what is incumbent upon all of us as compassionate beings.
It's all very confusing.
I know, Izzy, but someday you'll understand.
Hi, Izzy. Do you want to play fetch?
Not now, Laban. I need to call Esau. He was pretty angry about not being invited into the secret society.
But if it's a secret, shouldn't you not tell Esau about it?
But he already kind of knows. And if I told him more details, maybe he'd be more inclined to join.
Well, I don't know, Izzy.
Hey, Esau, it's Izzy.
Oh, hey.
What's that noise in the background?
Oh, that's just my grandpa casting evil spells. What do you want?
I was hoping you'd reconsider joining the secret society.
Nah, I'm in my own group.
Who's that on the phone? Hang up.
It's Izzy Ben Isaac. He's asking me to join his secret society.
Well, get all the details so we can infiltrate it and thwart those do-gooders.
Okay, Grandpa. Grandpa says to betray your secrets so we can thwart your goals.
Oh, hey, Izzy. I don't think that's such a hot idea.
But if it'll help persuade Esau to join...
But what's the point if he's just going to cause trouble?
Oh, shucks, Laban, I don't know. I wish there was some way of getting advice about such matters.
Me too, Izzy. Me too.
Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now as we spend some time together remembering and then forgetting and then remembering and then forgetting. Laying on a couch, looking up at the stars, trying to remember what the constellations are. And when we can't, we make up our own constellations. Look, that one's Sigmund Freud. Good morning. I'm Hardy White. I have a 10 o'clock appointment with Dr. Freud.
All right. Just sign in here and have a seat, and the doctor will see you in a moment.
Thanks.
You here to see Dr. Freud?
Yeah.
Me too. I'm not crazy, you know.
Okay.
I'm just here to explore my unconscious and be more self-aware.
Oh, that's great.
Because I'm a member of an ancient and evil secret organization who travels through time and disrupts society. You think that's crazy?
I hope it isn't.
Amen. Why are you here?
Something very similar.
Well, he's supposed to be good. I don't know. I saw Dr. Young before, and he was like, "You're a type." And I said, "No, you're a type." And he said, "You're a type." And I said, "No, you're a type."
Okay.
Mr. White?
I gotta go. Nice to meet you.
You didn't meet me.
Good morning, Dr. Freud.
Good morning, Mr. Witt. What? You said Mr. Witt instead of Mr. White. Did I? Yes. I think it's because you secretly think I'm funny. No, it was a mere lapsus linguae, a slip of the tongue, I assure you. No, you said there are no slips of the tongue. I think you said wit instead of white because you think I'm funny. No, I simply misspoke. Oh, come on. Excuse me. It's called a Freudian slip, isn't it? Not a Wittian slip. There, you did it again. No, I didn't. Wittian seems like the adjectival form of white. Whitian doesn't sound right. I don't know. No, you don't know. I still think it's because you think I'm funny. Well, that's very telling. Suffers from delusions of grandeur. Oh, come on, don't write that down. That's not fair. And persecution complex. Okay, you win. There. Now, what's the problem? Doctor, I'm in a moral crisis. I see. Go on. I feel like I'm more than one person sometimes. Sometimes I feel compassionate and understanding, and then other times I'm full of rage and thoughts of anger and revenge.
Well, that seems reasonable to me.
Who was that? Oh, I'm sorry, that's my friend Butchie. Your friend?
I wouldn't go that far. We're acquaintances.
That's enough, Butchie. I'm talking to the doctor. No, wait. May I speak to...
Butchie. My real name is Baruch Spinoza, but they call me Butchie.
Oh, listen, Doc, just ignore him. No, I'd like to ask Butchie a few questions.
Shoot!
Why are you so angry, Butchie? Butchie? Go ahead, man. Answer him. You might as well.
Okay. The question should be, why aren't you angry?
Why is that?
You don't have eyes and ears? Man, look around. The world is a crappy and unjust place. There's suffering and hunger and pain when there doesn't have to be, just because people suck.
Suck? On what do they suck?
On what did... Hey!
Oh, no, Doc. It's just an expression in the future. It means that people are inclined towards evil. Do you believe that?
I don't have to believe it. Don't you people have war and persecution here? Or is that just a post-MTV generation thing?
No, I concede human beings can be cruel.
Exactly. So what's more reasonable than rage?
Well, a little understanding seems reasonable.
And who is this? Oh, that's my friend Lou.
I'm Louis Toussaint Register. Yeah, don't listen to Butchie. He's negative.
Please, guys. This is my appointment, and you're eating into my time. No, I think it's valuable. Let me speak with Lou. Oh, Lord. Go ahead, Lou.
What?
Are you angry, Lou?
Sometimes. But I don't like the feeling. It's upsetting. Makes me throw up. I'd rather try to understand what folks are feeling. Feel their pain a little, so maybe I can help.
He's into helping people.
You make it seem like compassion's a hobby, like decoupage or pettipoint.
Go on, Lou.
Anywho, my philosophy is go with your heart. If something's hurtful to you, don't do it to others.
You're weak.
You're mean.
Come on, guys. Oh, this is all very interesting to me. Look, Doc, I don't see how talking to my housemates is going to help solve my problems.
This is why you aren't the most famous psychiatrist in history.
Excuse me, I am?
Oh, yeah.
Guys, please. No, wait. I'm one of the most famous psychiatrists in history?
No, I'd go with the most famous.
Really? Hey, it took me years to get this appointment, and you guys are totally hijacking it.
The doc wanted to talk to me. Don't blame me.
Yeah, you're not nearly as interesting as we are.
That's probably true. Say, would you fellas like to go out for lunch and continue this talk?
Sure.
I'm not ready for lunch. I wasn't speaking to you. Come on, fellas, I'll grab my coat and we'll hit a cafe and talk more about this conflict between outrage and understanding. And I guess I'll just stay here. You do that.
Man, I love the beard length, Sigmund. Nice look.
I'm always torn about what's a good length. Oh, great. Well, at least you're still here, friends. And we have this incredible psychiatrist's office all to ourselves. Oh, this is fun. Look, there's a fainting couch. And look at all these Kleenex boxes. Oh, so many Kleenex. What could we do with them? We could build our own parade float. Hey, you start blowing your nose on them, and then I'll stick them on this chicken wire armature. No, friend. Oh, my gosh. Why don't you... Let's play psychiatrist. That's not like playing doctor. I won't take advantage of you. Why don't you lay on this couch, and I will promise you, I swear, that if you fall asleep, I will not stick your thumb in warm water. Why? Because then we'd both have to clean up the pee. And I like to think ahead. I don't want to do that to you anyway. But you lie down, and here, I'll be your psychiatrist. I'm completely
not qualified, first of all, but I'm telling you that so that absolves me of any responsibility. Also, you'll notice that I have trimmed my beard to Sigmund Freud length. I had it very long. I had a long beard. And then I noticed that the singer from R.E.M., he'd grown his beard real long, and I didn't want to be mistaken for him. Why? Oh, I like him. It's just I didn't want people to think I was him. And then they might come to me and they'd say, hey, sing that complicated R.E.M. song with all the fast words that goes by real fast. And I wouldn't be able to do it. Here, I'll try, though. B.B. Bumble and the Stingers, Martha Hooper, Rachel Singers, Lonnie Mack and Twangy, and Eddie Hill, my ring, we're going steady, maybe in heaven, steady, 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 steady. Life is a rock, and I'm all right, or something like that. I don't know. I think I did pretty well, though, didn't I? Oh, yeah. Oh, what a great band. I tell you, I did see Michael Stipe at back in the 90s. I think I saw him at a costume party, and I was dressed as a monk, and he looked at me with either admiration or contempt. I could not tell the difference. But I was like, oh, there's a famous person over there. Oh, my friend, it's so good to be with you. I hope I can help. I'm going to sit here with a notepad or something, and you talk, and I will do either the New York Times crossword puzzle or Sudoku or something, and you'll think, well, he's writing things down. It must be important. But really, what's important is for you to hear your own voice. It's always important to get the thoughts out of your head somehow. A lot of times, so can't that be done electronically now? Isn't there some app or something? Or I've seen on Harry Potter where you can kind of, if you touch your wand to your head, you can pull them out at like thoughts like they're natto string, gooey. So, and then what you do is you put them in a bucket of water, stick your face in it like you're bobbing for apples, and you will see other people's thoughts as you drown. They say that as you're drowning, you can have visions because you're losing oxygen. A lot of people who free dive, who go down very, very deep. I don't ever seen that. You ever seen that movie where the guy's free diving and he goes, I think it's called Too Much Flesh, and he dives down really low and he doesn't come up again. Oh, I spoiled it for you. Don't go see this movie. Don't do that. Don't do that. We're in a shallow wading pond. That's the kind of free diving we do. Just stick your face in a kiddie pool, and you'll come up with all sorts of things. Some of them fecal, I'm sure, because you know why? Because we're all human. Everybody poops. Again, that's an R.E.M. song, I think, or a children's book. But we all do. Oh, why is that? It's just the way we're made, I guess. A lot of things poop. Some don't. Crystals don't. I guess they're not alive, really. But everything makes waste, in a way, doesn't it? Like these Kleenex that I've convinced you to just discard on the floor. Why do we have them here in the psychiatrist or psychologist's office? Or anything with a P. You can really, if you're hurting, you can go see a philosopher or a psychologist or a physiologist or and who can have your physiognomy, anything that begins with P, really. Podiatrist, politician, don't go see a politician. They're just going to say, They only like you if you agree with them. So you obviously don't agree with me, so I have nothing to say to you. But, oh, my friends, I know you're so frustrated with the world. That's why I want you to lay here and take a nap in front of me while I stare at you. Well, that's unnerving. Perhaps that's what we all need, is for someone to be staring at us as we sleep. It's like a child. Babies are like that. Say, Mama, you're creeping me out. Can't I just sleep? Oh, I'm in love with your face. I just want to stare at you like an angel. Oh, yeah, you're like some sort of angel, too, you know? Lucifer, I think. She's looking at you. What are you going to do when I'm asleep? I think you're like the Count de Lautremont, and you're going to stick your fingernails in my belly and pull out my guts. So what kind of child are you? What have you been reading? I don't know, you scared me with all those surrealist books on the bookshelf. Now that's your child. I'm seeing what you really have up there. Marquis de Sade, really? Hey, it's for historical purposes. He was an inspiration to the surrealists. Oh, gosh, well, I don't know. Maybe I'm not into that then, said the baby. You tell me about your... Lay on the couch. Now, if you're driving a car, don't.
But maybe you can go home later and listen to the show. Lay upon the couch, and I will sit here, and I'm practicing tilt. I've been to therapy, and what the therapist does a lot of times is she'll tilt her head back and forth like that and go, mm-hmm, really? No, go on. Tell me more. And I know she's bored and everything. And at the end, she'll say something like, well, I think we've made good progress today, Harvey. Oh, good Lord. Right?
Am I right?
No, that's not. A lot of people will care. But who really can solve your problems? Again, a medical professional. There's a whole list. You also can. Really? No, not necessarily. We need help sometimes. And that's why I won't be your helper. So you tell me what to do. How would I know? I don't know, man. Why don't you just relax on the couch and we'll talk about stuff that's bothering us. And I think what you'll find is that those same things are bothering me. Well, how does that help? It doesn't. But, you know, Missouri loves company. And so it has Kansas and Kentucky to make it feel better about itself. But we all, oh, my friends, are in it together, aren't we? The world is like, it is like a pool or something or a kiddie pool at a water park. You know, if one of us has a problem, an intestinal problem, we all suffer, don't we? So should that person stay out of the pool? Maybe. But I think more importantly, we shouldn't stick our face in it. I don't know. Or chlorinate it. Chlorine. Chlorine is an interesting thing. When I was young and I'd visit my grandparents, they'd say, my grandfather would say, good to see you. Go test the pool. Muriatic acid to chlorine balance. And I'd love to do that. So my grandfather's little testing kit. And you would take water, you'd scoop up the water into a square vial. And then you would put a few drops of some chemical in it, put the lid on, and hold it up and put it in this thing and then compare the color to this other color key and say, where is it? Is it pink? Is it yellow? And it would tell you, you need to add muriatic acid or you need to add chlorine or something like that. It would tell you what to do to get the balance right. And that would, there one has a high pH, one has a low pH, but both of them, you put them both in there together and they kill all the algae and the bacteria and stuff and make your water nice and sterile. So you can jump into it and the filth of your fellow human being will be mitigated, will be counteracted by these chemicals. Now, in our life and our interaction together, what are these chemicals? What is the chlorine and muriatic acid of our interactions together, if not art and poetry? I just came up with that. I pulled that out of the same place that a lot of people pull things that aren't particularly good for us. But I think maybe, yes, maybe that is it. Maybe when we understand each other, our eyes are open. But you say so many in this world seem intent on evil, seem to hate their fellow man. Yes, I understand this. What can we do about it? Well, I think a lot of times challenge people to a duel, either with swords or with very ancient pistols. No, that doesn't seem right. I don't know what to do about it. I don't know. And I think it has been a problem for a long time. We don't know how to handle others with whom we cannot reason. You know? So what? How do you deal with them? I have always thought to confuse them. If you keep people on their toes, if you keep them from really being able to even articulate their hate, if you keep them spinning, if you keep their heads spinning, perhaps we can just hold them at bay long enough to not do any damage. Because, you know, it's like a crazy person thrashing around. You don't want them to hurt others, but you also don't want them to hurt themselves. So how do you do it? How do you do it? You say sometimes you just round them up and put them in prisons. I say round them up and put them in fun houses. But everybody should be in a place where they, oh my goodness, I have seen the reality of life and it's absurd and confusing. What I'll do is when people come to me and they say, Artie, I really want to see the world as it is. And I'll say, well, all right. And I get my shrinky dink ray and I shrink them down to various sets of quantum size until they are surfing on quantum foam and say, oh boy, I'm in a place where nothing is differentiated. I thought things were particles, or maybe they're waves, but they're not. They're sort of a guab. And they are, and I've coined that phrase, and that is really what is essentially at the basis of things. They start to become less differentiated, and you say, oh, this is very absurd. Then you get very large. Get very large, go out to the largest scale, and things also seem undifferentiated. Look, it's all just a goo. It looks like somebody's spread some kind of sparkly smear. It's if I took clear, this is the way the universe is, take some clear cream cheese. Where do I get that? I don't know. You're going to have to make it out of silicone, I think. But take that and put glitter in it so you have clear, glittery cream cheese smear, and then that is smeared upon what is like a bagel, a torus, this object that turns on into itself. Is this really how the universe works? I don't know, man. I just, that's not my job. I didn't really study very much in school. I've spent most of my time being confused and scared and angry. And so it would distract me, you know? And I didn't really see that I would be needing all this information. Oh, yeah, what am I going to ever use math for? That's what I'd say. What am I going to ever use English for? See? I should have studied. What am I ever going to use history for? What am I going to ever use grammar for? For what am I ever going to use grammar? For what am I ever going to use grammar? So I didn't pay attention sometimes. Oh, whoa, did I learn? Yes, I'll tell you, sometimes this information is power. It gives you the key to things. And when you don't have the key, you're forced to use your lockpicks. And it takes a lot longer. But it can be done, and it's more fun. So I don't know. I give contradictory messages sometimes. Sometimes I say, Hardy, you say reason and logic is where it's at. Yeah, man, it's where it's at. I'm hep to that. And then you say, gee, you say confusion and emotion and illogic and absurdity is important. Yeah, what are you driving at? Well, it can't be both. How's that? What do you mean it can't be both? That's like saying, we need protein. And then on the other hand, you say we need carbohydrates. Yeah, I mean, it's balance, man. When I was young and I would watch television, and I'd watch cartoons, there'd be ads for cereal, as you all know. And the cereal would say, hey, along with toast, juice, milk, vitamins, other things, this is part of a nutritious breakfast. Well, then I grew up and I realized that what they were saying is, if you take a nutritious breakfast and you add our cereal to it, it's a nutritious breakfast. That makes such sense. Yes, it does. So why add the cereal to it? Fun is an egg shaped like a green blue clover, like the marshmallows are in the Lucky Charms? Is it, can you get the same experience from dry toast as you can from Kaboom? I don't think they make Kaboom anymore. Kaboom, little colorful wheels. Tricks, all those things. They say, oh, those sweet cereals, they rot your teeth. But you know what? Something that people ignore about those cereals, they're fortified. What do you mean? They're fortified. They add vitamins that you would not normally get because a lot of people don't have a balanced diet. So on the one hand, you're getting sugar, and it's not good for you, but you're also getting vitamin A, B, B12, D, C, D, E, F, G, H, L, M, N, P, Q, all those things, minerals, magnesium, guano, estrogen, sodium, silicon, all the things that you need to survive in this world are in there. So sometimes even in things like, that's why I say I can find wisdom even in the silliest of places, like a cartoon. Or the funnies. I always go right to the funny pages in the paper. And they don't have them anymore, so I have to time travel. Do you really time travel?
Would you believe me if I said, I mean, does it matter if, you know, if you believe me or not? You know, I could say yes, but you say, well, that's not, you get hung up on the truth of things. I do. Everything I say about myself is true. You say, well, that doesn't seem possible. Well, it's, you know, it's the way I see it. If I think I'm doing it, who's to say I'm not?
Well, there's objective reality.
Indeed. Indeed. But there we also know that there's the reality of the mind. And while it may be all illusion, who's to say? Because it is equally as real. Things are really going on in my brain. Oh, yes, they are. And how did they get there?
I'll tell you how they got there, through my senses.
I've been reading a lot about the senses and memory now. I don't purport to know very much, and so when I read something, sometimes I tell you before I've fully absorbed it because I'm so anxious to teach. I volunteer all the time and say, I teach anybody, and they go, well, you're not qualified. And they go, really? Do you have to be? Because some of the best teachers are entertainers.
Yeah, but they don't teach actual facts and everything.
I don't know, man. But, you know, if you get somebody's imagination stimulated, maybe they can teach themselves. Maybe they can get excited and go out and look for things. Maybe just getting them jazzed up is enough. Maybe I don't have to be the one that gives them the facts. Maybe I just have to tell you, oh, you are the greatest detective that ever lived. You may go out and explore these things for yourself, but these are some things I learned this week. One, your nerves don't work as fast as you think they do. Prove it. I will prove it. Go do this experiment. Turn your stove on high. Put your hand on it. Oh, no, don't do that. This is the thought experiment. I should have said that. But you know from experience that when you stick your hand on something hot, it doesn't take a few seconds. It takes less than a second, but it might as well be a few seconds. But it's not instantaneous, like you think. You don't touch and go, wow. In fact, it's so long that by the time you feel it, you've already burned yourself. So I've done that in the kitchen, put my hand on something and go, woo! And it takes so long to draw my hand away before I feel it that I've already burned myself. That's because this is the rate that things really go at. You know, you put your hand on it, and then the nerve impulse goes, oh, I guess I better be going. And it goes, ah! By the time it gets there, it's too late. So things move a little slowly. I learned that. That's interesting. Sometimes that's why you react before you even can think. By the time it gets to your conscious mind, it's way too late. Another thing I learned is about long-term memory versus short-term memory. And I learned that long-term memories need a little time to sink in when you're learning something or memorizing something. They need a bit because your brain's got to synthesize proteins, whatever that means. So when you learn some. Let's say you're memorizing a list or something unfamiliar. It takes a while for that to sink in. Now, if that sinking in process is interrupted in any way, you don't remember it. So let's say you're driving to the boxing ring, and you pass the McDonald's, and you remember that, and you talk to your friend Joe, and you remember that, and then right before you get in the ring, you talk to your friend Mary. Then you get in the ring, and a few seconds later, you're knocked out. Boom. Down you go. You wake up, and you remember talking to Joe, but not to Mary. That's because the Joe memory had time to sink in, but the Mary memory was interrupted before it was into your long-term memory. Now, how does that apply in your life? Oh, think about it. Let's say now that we live in this age of rapid information, you might read something on the internet, and you might read it and you go, gosh, that's a good point. That's amazing. And before it has gone into your long-term memory, you're on something else and thinking about that. Now, the first thing hasn't had time to synthesize those proteins to make it a long-term memory. You've interrupted it. And there's constant interruptions. So that it's very difficult to really let things sit in. It's not like when you read a book and you go, I'm going to read that, I'm going to close that, I'm going to think about it for a minute, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to let it sink in. It's literally sinking in. So in this day and age, with all this information flying at us, We're forgetting things. So it's easy to be tricked. You can be tricked more easily now because your memory, I believe this, is being intentionally, constantly interrupted so that it doesn't go into long-term memory. You are being kept in a constant state of amnesia by techniques that are made possible by the rapid injection of information into your brain. And the only way to combat it is information fasting. And you say, well, if I do that, Hardy, I will miss something. No, you will actually gain something because you'll be able to remember stuff and think about it before you go back and get more. Now, people have done experiments with this, so I don't know that I'm making it up, but I could be. So what? Here's the problem. I'm about to intentionally make you forget that.
How are you going to intentionally make you forget that?
You know how? Because we're going to start talking about, do you like Led Zeppelin? When I was living in Florida, I was a child. I went to, I wasn't a child, I was kind of a preteen or teenager. Maybe I was 15, 16. I was in Fort Lauderdale. And I had gone to see a movie with friends. I think it was the first Alien movie. And we were coming out and we were walking around trying to get whatever out of our system that we had foolishly put in there. And we encountered one of those wonderful, colorful street fellas. This is a kind of a disheveled white dude with long hair and kind of messy clothes. And he came up to us and he said, "You got a light?" And one of us had a light, unfortunately, and lit a cigarette. And he looked at us. He put his fist up in like a kind of a power salute, like a black power salute. But he said, "Led Zeppelin," like that, as a greeting. And we, in kind, put our fist up and went, "Led Zeppelin." So anytime that somebody would, you know, act of kindness, something towards us, we go, "Led Zeppelin, Led Zeppelin." So I always do that now. Somebody does something nice for me. I say Led Zeppelin. They say Led Zeppelin back. Now, there's two kinds of Led Zeppelins. There's the hobbity Led Zeppelin and the medley Led Zeppelin. So some of them are hobbit songs, and some of them I call orc songs. All right? And they're more like that. That is because the human spirit is both a hobbit and an orc. And we can see that we are two different things often, aren't we? Just like poor little Gollum is both a hobbit-like creature. He's both Smeagol and Gollum, isn't he? We all have that conversation in us, don't we, constantly?
I don't.
All right, Butchie.
I really don't. I'm pretty much just me.
All right, man. I'm sorry that you felt you had to interrupt to say that, but there you go.
It's just that I got it more together, I think.
All right.
See, if you got different parts of yourself, put them together.
All right. It's not that easy, you know. For you it is, maybe, but most of us are conflicted. So I want to be kind, but sometimes, you know, I feel angry. I have all sorts of grandparents and great-grandparents and things. They're not always around anymore because of being dead. And I didn't know them all. I knew my great-grandmother, and I knew two of my great-grandmothers, actually. One of my grandmother's great-grandmothers lived in Haddonfield, New Jersey. Oh, no, there's a New Jersey connection. I know. We're all connected. Oh, all my brothers and sisters all around the world, we are all connected. And somehow it all comes back to New Jersey. Isn't that strange?
Yes, it's strange.
Wouldn't it be funny if New Jersey was the center of some kind of cosmic wheel? That's not possible, Hardy, but things were here before it was called New Jersey. Without people in it, you wouldn't recognize it. If you went to Paterson, before people got there, you just see beautiful waterfalls and trees. And then Hamilton it up. Hamilton. Love him. He put the ham in Hamilton, didn't he?
What?
I don't know. It's a play, right, or something now. It's a musical. That's beautiful. Everybody, in the future, I think Jimmy Cagney said this, in the future, every historical figure will have a 15-minute musical written about them. Isn't that amazing? Even historic figures that we... Did you say historic or historical? I meant historical. Did I say historic? Historical, you meant. All right, sorry. Figures will have something written about them. Isn't that nice? People go looking for obscure historical figures just for that sole reason. Isn't that interesting? You should... what's that? Randolph of Roanoke? Was that his name? Crazy senator from Virginia back in the 19th century? Do a musical on him. Was it John Randolph? He might, I don't know. He was a very strange character. He spoke like this. He didn't have a beard. He had some kind of childhood disease that kept him from maturing. And so he was like a little kid. He was like an angry little child senator. And I believe he got in an argument because he used to like to bring his dogs to the Senate. And there's like, you can't do that. And he's like, you try to stop me. Do a musical on him. I think right now, get to work. Oh, there's so much to be done. There's so much to be investigated. There's so much to forget. I haven't forgotten near as much as I should have. I'm still trying to. I'm systematically forgetting names of celebrities. I like that. I lost Gary Oldman the other day. Couldn't remember his name. Drove me crazy. Now I can't forget it. Isn't that interesting? So, it's so possible. This is every family. This is my family. I'm going to give you my family in a nutshell. This is every family gathering on one side of the family I ever go to. Who is that actor? What is the name of that guy who played in Gunsmoke? And we'll be like, A, B, C, D, E. I'm going to get it. Ken something. Ken. Ken. And it goes on like that. Oh, my gosh. That's all that's a sum total of the conversation. Then once we get it, we just move on to somebody else. You know? It goes like that. What is the name of that show? What is the name of that movie? And we just do this endlessly. Endlessly. And I don't mind, because it keeps us from arguing. Not that we would argue. Because I time travel, unfortunately, I do get to speak to ancestors that I didn't know as an adult. People I just saw as a child and worshiped. So, I love my granny so much. I love my pop-pop so much and everything. Then you see, pop-pop's a giant ass. What a horrible man. I thought he's nice because he's nice to children. Turns out he's crappy or a criminal or something. That often happens. And you think, well, which is the real Pop-Pop? The one that was gentle to me as a child? Or the one that was harsh, the one that hit people or something? I don't know. This is not my real family. It's just hypothetical. And what is the real person? Who are we? And what happens when we start to lose our minds? As you know, we reach the end of life sometimes. Hello? Did you go to sleep? That's why we don't have couches anymore at these psychiatrists. Wake up. You're a little too comfortable. You say, I feel like you already solved my problems. I'm going back to sleep. Sleep. When I sleep, I feel like I've escaped. I've gone somewhere else. For a little while, those things that bother me go away. And sometimes say, I can't sleep very much anymore, Hardy. I know. And when you can't, it's so devastating. You get tired. You don't have any energy. Say, I'm not sleeping. I got insomnia and everything. I know. Wears you down. What is it? You think it's physical? You think it's you're laying there thinking about horrible thoughts? Here's a horrible thought. Familial fatal insomnia. It's very rare, but it's real. You can actually have, it's a brain condition, a form of insomnia. You can't sleep at all, and it kills you eventually. It takes a while. First, it wrecks your brain because you're not sleeping and you just have dementia and all that, and then eventually you actually die from it.
Oh, my word.
I know. When I found out about that, that was devastating to me because I have illness anxiety disorder. And so that used to be called hypochondria. But if I get something, oh, I start fixating on it. Now, you say I thought you weren't really attached to life. I thought you were some kind of wise man or monk or something. Oh, I'm so sorry I gave you the wrong impression. No, I'm a wreck, just like you. I just sometimes, I find it in myself. I find a little kernel of wisdom. Haven't you ever been looking around and you find little something in the pantry? You say, what is that? Could be a wisdom kernel. So it was in a 35-millimeter film case. Uh-oh, what is that? I bet it's drugs or something. Oh, no, it's your child's dried umbilical stump. Why were you keeping that? Or a tooth? My mother would keep my teeth for the longest time. She even had a little clear box. It was a little pink and clear plastic box and said, my tooth on it. And my teeth are in it. And they're all brown and nasty. Little shell of a baby tooth. Why on earth? You can't even clone me from this, I don't think. I don't know, this DNA's not even in it. Why would you just keep my little teeth in case I went back in time and needed a spare tooth? Or I don't even know what they're for. I know that in Raymond Roussel's novel Locus Solus, that the main character makes a mosaic out of teeth, or rather he invents a machine powered by the wind that makes mosaics from teeth, because they're all different colors. Every different color of the yellow to brown rainbow. And maybe even, I don't know if your teeth are red. Maybe they are from chewing beetle leaves, B-E-T-E-L. I don't know where in Indonesia you're from, so I don't know what you do, if you're from Malaysia or Burma or whatever, what have you. Not Burma. Oh my gosh, that's not what I meant. Oh, I'm so sorry. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. What matters is that you are you. And you're not like others. You are a little bit. It's just a template. Did you ever make stencils? It's supposed to come out the same every time, but it doesn't. There's variations. Sometimes you don't hold the stencil close enough and there's little blurs out the lines and everything. Not every Barbie doll is the same, even though they come from the same factory. You could have some of them could have slightly more plastic flashing on the inner thigh. You don't know. Variations. And are they all for a purpose? Not necessarily. Not necessarily. Oh, the Lord made me this way, but his expectations for me are unrealistic. It's harder for me to do this than it is for my neighbor. That may be. That may be. We've all given different stuff, and it's not necessarily for a reason. That's why it's so important to be there to help one another. I may have something you need. But more importantly, for me, you may have something I need. That's our relationship here. What's our relationship, Hardy White? You are giving me something that I need. What's that? I need somebody to pay attention to me. I need somebody to take me seriously. I'm not a successful person. I'm not a smart person. Not consistently very funny intentionally. I'm just ordinary. And when you pay attention to me or you say, I like your story or you're keeping me company, you saved my life. You absolutely do. You give me a reason to go on. And maybe I, by sharing my story with you, can help you. But you see, it works both ways. And I do get something out of it. I like our relationship because it ain't about money. You know, you don't owe me anything. You don't pay for this. You sort of do. I mean, your radio station needs support and everything, but you don't give me any money for it. And I don't ask you for anything because I am getting something out of it. This is a symbiotic relationship, do you understand? We are sharks and remora. You suck bacteria off my belly. Isn't that what they do? Maybe? Are they there for a reason?
You know, that's what symbiotic relationships are for. This isn't a lot of ones that are money or parasitic relationships. Not us. Oh, my friends, we are genuine friends, and we are doing what genuine friends do, aren't we? We have taken over a psychiatrist's office. We have stolen his Kleenex, or Kleenai, or whatever the tissues, the tissue. Kleenex, I guess, is a brand name, so I don't want to use that. Tissues. Tissues, tissue. There's no H in it. Tissue. Tissue? We have taken his tissues, and sometimes we cry together. And we cry, sometimes when we cry, the snot is released. And we go, I'm so embarrassed. I'm crying, but I'm also snotting and everything. And why the Lord has done that is to lighten up the crying a little bit. So, weeping, you know, yeah, you got a little something. Oh, Lord, sorry about that. And then you giggle about the big string of disgusting snot that is dangling from your nose in front of your granny's coffin. And you know your granny would be horrified. She didn't find things like that amusing at all. At my grandmother's funeral, a very unusual thing happened. Oh, first of all, I was devastated. I loved her. And she'd been sick, you know, but still, it's always a shock. Even if they're old and sick, they're finally gone. It's hard. So I walked up to that coffin. You know, in our tradition, there's viewings. These funeral homes make you think you got to do all this stuff, whether you want to or not. They impose it on you. If your religious tradition doesn't already have some kind of death rituals, then the industry that makes money off it will be happy to make some up for you. And they involve purchasing lots of things and all. So our lack of really good death traditions is being taken advantage of is by those who would make money. I'm sorry to say it, but it's true. So you do this thing where you walk up to the coffin. A lot of times it's metal, which is horrifying. And there, my grandmother is laying in her coffin, wearing the dress that we had given the funeral home to put on her, wearing her dress backwards. They put it on backwards on my grandmother, who always looked perfect, always dressed to the nines, always cared so much about her appearance. And here she was laying in that coffin and with her dress on backwards. And I couldn't help but giggle a little. I wasn't, you know, I was also incensed, but I was also sort of amused, and I was thinking, oh, what foolish humans we are. We can't retain our dignity ever at all, so why bother? That's why I let it all hang out. I don't care how foolish I look, and I welcome you to do the same. If you would abandon that obsession with appearance, the obsession with controlling how others see you, or even how you see yourself, and embrace your contradictions, and embrace your forgetting. Now I'm going to ask you a question. What was the thing that I told you that you would forget? Do you remember it? It all goes so much. You change subjects so fast, that's I can't remember everything. Exactly. I feel like it's very important during my show to ensure that all of your memories stay short-term during this hour. I don't want you to put it deeply in there. I don't want it to, because that's my thoughts. I want you to go get your own. This is just to amuse you and keep you company. This shouldn't be anything that you put away and store for another day. Don't keep it. It's meant to be enjoyed now. It's like eggnog or something. Real eggnog you can't store. You got to eat it. You got to drink it right then while the egg whites are all whipped up and everything. It isn't something that can be saved. Many of the greatest things are things that can't be saved. They must be enjoyed in the moment, like a sand mandala. Like some sort of treat right off the stove, like a s'more, however you want to say it. I don't know why I Yiddishize everything. But it's a s'more.
You got to eat it right away while it's hot. That's when it has value. You say, but I like to preserve things, you know. I like to set them in amber. But then, you know, they're useless to you in another way. And there's many things that are worth remembering, but not my show, not your interaction with me. My mother has this habit, and this is how she tells a joke. It's very interesting, and I've said this before, and it's very important the way she does it, because I believe that she is the most complete being to ever live. And she will say this. She will go, oh, I laughed. That's the first thing she said. And then she'll say, Betty told me this joke. It's about a baker. Oh, it's funny. How's it go? I laughed so hard. And, you know, it's frustrating. What's the joke, Ma? But that's not what's important. This is what she took away from it. Joy. I remember the joy. I may not remember the details of that joke, but the very first thing that I remember is I laughed. And then I remember who I laughed with, my friend Betty. Now, it could have been any joke, and I bet if she did recall the joke, it might not even been funny. And maybe by telling me, it would have diminished it, because I said, Mom, that's not funny. And then that would have eaten into her joy. I don't want to do that. So you see, sometimes it's okay to just remember the feeling and not the details. You can go relearn the details later. Everything I say is available in books. I'm going to give it to you wrong anyway. I'm going to mispronounce things anyway. You go off and you find out the real thing. I'm just giving you ideas and hints, you know? Say, oh, I already said something, and it triggered a memory. I'm going to go and see a Gary Oldman movie or something. You see how that works? That's how it's intended to work. I don't want this to be a lecture to you or a sermon. I want it to be like a visit with your friend, about which you only remember the feeling. Sometimes I don't have words in me. Sometimes I just have sounds in me. Sometimes I just have expressions in me. Like that. And that's what I make. I make them, and it makes me seem crazy, doesn't it? Oh, everybody thinks people are crazy. The more that they are themselves. And you know that feeling. You go to a party and you get a little too comfortable, maybe. And so you start to be a little too much yourself. And maybe you're a little eccentric or different. And then you start seeing people's expressions because you've done something unexpected. And it makes you feel worse about yourself. And you become a little bit self-conscious. And then you become a little bit less yourself. I don't want that to happen. I don't want that to happen. I want you to be relentlessly you. And you will find out as you get older, if you're not already incredibly old, that the way your brain's set up is you are relentlessly you regardless. And your ability to not be you will diminish over time to the point where you go, you know what? I now have nothing to lose. I'm not 90, but I have friends who are 90. I'm 90 years old. Being one of the cool kids is not a priority. I got one foot in the grave. And you know, the good thing about one of my many brain malfunctions, the one that makes me feel like I'm dying when I'm not, is that it sort of erases all my desire for recognition or ambition or anything like that. I suddenly think, hey, I don't want any award. I just want to be alive. I don't want praise. I just want to live, you know? I don't want some big recognition or I don't want to be famous or anything. I just want to interact with people. I just want to have one more day. And you know, the theme song to this show reflects that. You know, just one more day. One more day with you. That's what I want. One more day on earth. I see so many people living their lives, especially those who are obsessed with money and power. How long they think they're going to live? Haven't you seen kings drop dead? Haven't you seen noblemen and rich men killed, or people, no matter how much she knows, your professor dies? I've lost friends with so much knowledge in their head, and then they're gone. And you say, wow, that person who knew all about the brain, who knew about all about how to help people who are having certain brain problems, not only is he gone, but all that knowledge is gone. Well, it's not. It's in other people, too. Spread it out. Oh, my friend, share. That's how we're going to change the world. You put it out there selflessly, and you will feel, you know, you say, don't do it for a reward. But, you know, that's just, I'm winking at you because you know there is a reward. You know, you don't deserve it often, but you'll get it. And that's love sometimes. You'll be lucky enough to get it. No one deserves anything, I suppose. But when we do get it, it's beautiful. Now, how can is a stranger's love, is your love real? You don't know me. I don't. Everything I say, when I say I love you, or I love you, friend, that's hope. That's hope. That's how I want it to be. I hope that you're able to accept that and give it back. Because, you know, to think that this world isn't a harsh place, you have to have your eyes closed. And when you open them, it can be terrifying. But I'll tell you, if you feel an arm around you while you're looking at that terror, it can help you. Let's all put our arms around one another. Be brothers and sisters. Where has that gone? I was taught that we should be. And I've fought for it, and it's hard. And I often betray that. And I often am a terrible neighbor, a terrible brother to you, a terrible friend, selfish or cruel. But I'm trying because I know that ideal is the truth. It's been shown to me, oh man, what is good, to love justice, to be kind, and to walk with my creator. And if you don't feel like you have a creator, with your ideals, something you know is true, something in your heart that you know is good, hang on to it. Hang on to it and trust it. Oh, my friends, don't be confused. If somebody tries to confuse you, you respond, you go, dibble, blah, 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 blah. And they'll go, you cannot see that you, and you respond back, blah, 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 blah. That's the only proper response to nonsense, is more nonsense. Respond with nonsense and then go out and love relentlessly. Go out and exercise compassion relentlessly. But when you are, and when somebody comes up to you with something that is ridiculous, you be ridiculous back. All their hate, it's ridiculous. You are not like that. Even though Mingus was angry, he knew what was ridiculous. Mingus never, well, I guess he hurt maybe some people, but not, you know, not intentionally. But he knew that hate's ridiculous. Prejudice is ridiculous. Oh, my friends, you are listening to me, Hardy White. Nobody. And WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County, and online at WFMU.org. I'm so blessed that you are in my life. I thank you, have a wonderful week, and I will see you again next week.